You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. What would you do if you could increase your productivity enough to get back one full working day per week? Or let's just say around 52 days per year. Or how do you think your team members might react if you ask them the same question? Would you spend it with family, generate more listings, or question that it's even possible? The answers to these questions, believe it or not, are what helped Sharan Srivatsa take the business of Tellers Real Estate on the west coast of North America from $300 million in revenue to $3.4 billion in a period of 5 years before selling the business to East Coast powerhouse Douglas Elliman. Sharan is coming to Australia in September, headlining an amazing lineup at the Business of Real Estate event, now in its fifth year. In this podcast, you'll get a taste of what Sharan is all about. He talks about why he got into the business of real estate, what he learned, at what point he knew it was time to get out, and how he used his own unique form of content marketing to motivate his team. Being an investment banker by trade, he also talks frankly about how to value businesses and why you need to think of your own exit plan in seven-year cycles. Okay, so welcome to the podcast, Sharan Srivatsa.
Thanks, Sam. I'm excited to be here and I appreciate you having me.
Oh, look, we are really excited to have you on the podcast and we're also really looking forward to meeting you when you're in Australia in September for the Business of Real Estate Conference.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. Just being there with you and Michael Shergold and the team, it's a chance for me to share just the journey and all that we've accomplished, but in the spirit of contribution. So I'm excited to kind of bring the lessons down and bring the vulnerability and come with a giving hand to Australia very soon.
Well, you've had an amazing career journey, so I'm sure you're going to bring some amazing lessons with you. And not only have you been involved in the real estate industry, but you've had some high-profile jobs with really big companies like Goldman Sachs and Credit Suisse, and you've been involved in successful startups. And today you're very much in the entrepreneurial space. You're a speaker, you're an angel investor, and the CEO of Kingston Lane, which we'll get to in a moment. But I think what's really incredible about your journey is the fact that in just 5 years, you took over a real estate business, which was Tellers, doing about $300 million. It's a lot of money in anyone's language. And then you transformed it into a $3.4 billion business, which is 10 times, and then sold it. So that is probably one of the unicorns of any business that other people would be inspired by. Let's go back in time first. Tell us what made you decide to buy the business and what was your real estate background prior to that?
So great question. My only real estate background prior to that was as an investor. And all I did was invest in broad-based real estate projects such as fixes and flips or kind of apartment condo buildings. And that's all I had done. And I was very passive. The idea was I had me and my partner were invested in several businesses. And we also invested in real estate because for long-term growth of wealth, if you will. And that was my only knowledge of real estate. I had never actually talked to an agent more than once to buy or sell my home. And that was the only experience I had. So we were passive investors in this company called Tellus. The reason we invested in it was we had started a fund that invested in several companies in the real estate space. So we realized, Sam, that if we are going to invest in companies that are, say, adjacent to a real estate transaction, we should probably have some kind of knowledge of how a transaction works, and not from a we want a piece of the pie perspective, but more from a, could we be aligned with an organization that could give us the pulse on the market, could be advisors to us? And so we were passive investors in Tellus. And that was the original entree into a brokerage firm. I actually had no idea how the economics even worked. It was almost just what we called a gateway play. We made the gateway investment just so we could call somebody and say, hey, how's the market? How's it going? Should we invest? Should we not invest? It was almost an access card for a reason for us to invest. And that story turned a little bit, and the 10-second turn of that story is the original partners at that time had different visions for the business when they started it. And so as the business started to grow, and they grew pretty quickly in the luxury market of Beverly Hills and the surrounding areas in Los Angeles, and the three founders, as they started to build and grow the business, They did well and they recruited some great agents. However, each of their visions for the business started to go separate ways. And no harm, no foul. It just so happened, and generally happens in a lot of businesses where partners can take their visions in different ways. And at that time, me and my partner had the opportunity as just passive investors to be advisors to the business. Our goal was to try and either bring the partners together or land the path in a different way so that everyone could work together or what have you. Yeah. And so we realized that the partners at that time were probably not destined to stay together. And two out of the three went their separate ways. And the original, one of the founders who ended up being my partner for 7 years, stayed with the business. And then we kind of came in, restructured the business that would work well for us. And at that time, we had one office with about 45 agents. And we were starting to open two or three other offices. So I came in at an early point of growth. We had about 45 agents, roughly had done $300 million in top line sales. And that was kind of the beginning of, okay, well, I was an investment banker in New York. I had actually moved over. We're starting to operate this business that I didn't even know how the economics of a commission transaction even worked. And yeah. So I learned the business from the inside out as the operator.
Yeah. So obviously you've gone to California, you've invested in a business, you've decided that you're going to run it. You haven't run a real estate business before. What were those first few weeks like?
Great question. So my first week, I did two things. I remember this very vividly, Sam. I spent the first 2 days just combing through the financials because, you know, as they say in any kind of witch hunt, if you follow the money, you'll figure out how it all works.
They say here the numbers don't lie.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I realized I couldn't really have an intelligent conversation with anybody about the business without understanding how the numbers work. So I dug deep into the business. And, you know, our business is really simple, right? We sell a bunch of homes. We get some commission. We use that commission to service agents very well. And we drop some money to the bottom line as profit. Like, we should not overcomplicate our business, right? Understanding how each of those ratios worked, because I was an investment banker, I was, you know, digging into the numbers saying, hey, if I change this variable, what happens? If I change that variable, what happens? Because if you understand the sensitivity of the numbers in the business, you understand the business. So yeah. I spent the first 2 days, Sam, just on a whiteboard in a spreadsheet saying, like, let me understand what this is. Till I knew ratios and percentages and numbers, I just knew I had to memorize. So if someone told me, oh, our conversion is X or our profit margin is Y, I could say no, yes. I kind of did that. But there are two other big pieces of the puzzle. I had this conversation with each of our early original investors. And I said, why did you actually invest in this company and start it from scratch? And you know what was amazing, Sam, was each of their 12 stories was completely different. Certain people were interested in it for pride of ownership. Some just wanted a stake in something. Some just wanted to feel like they were wanted, whatever it may be. And it just blew my mind that now we had stakeholders all having very different reasons why they'd invested in something. And that's when I actually knew. I was like, wow, I need to become a very skilled operator in this business, but also a diplomat, if you will, to manage all the rationales and the reasons for investing. And that was the beginning of, all right, I think I have my work cut out for me. How do I actually learn this from the inside out?
So what were the first areas, like obviously with your banking background and things like that, you realized very quickly that the business had some potential somewhere along the line. What were the things that you mostly focused on to get that sort of growth? Because 5 years seems such a short space of time to grow a business that large. So what were the big rocks that you focused on?
Yeah, great question. So we focused on three big things. And these are extremely tactical. And I think they'll apply to most businesses around the world, specifically even real estate businesses in Australasia. The first, what I realized was from a value proposition perspective, everyone seems to do the same thing. And I was like, you know, there's got to be something different. When I show up and I talk to an agent to recruit her or him, what do I say that is different? And can I prove it? Like, what is the value proposition? And I'll give you the value proposition because I almost had to come up with it and then go build it, right? Yeah. It's not that we had it. Like, I had to come up with it and say, is this sexy enough? And then let's build it. And every single recruit appointment, and here's the value prop, it's straight up. Every single recruit appointment, I'd start with this question, Sam. I'd say, Sam, I know you take 7 or more listings in a year. What if I could give you 1 day back per week? if you had another 52 days a year, what would you do with your time? Right. And so my idea was, if all things remain constant, could I give the agent back one day a week in a very structured way so that they would have 52 days back a year? And Sam, that was not anything hokey. What I was looking for was what the agent would tell me that they would do with those 52 days a year. Now you get three general responses. The agent in recruiting would say, well, those 52 days a year, you know, that gives me more time with my family. Then I instantly know that there is a relationship family component and I need to coach that person and mentor that person on that is their sensitivity point, and that's how I help create success for them. The second type of agent would say, how could you possibly do that? There's so many things that are needed in our business. You possibly can't give me one day a week back. Then I know that agent is very mechanical and sequential in how they think about the world, and I have to explain process to them. And now I can win because if I give them process as an advantage, maybe they win with that process. And the third type of agent would just be like, oh, Sharon, there's no way you can do something like that. And that is the agent that just has a significant mindset opportunity where when I tell them they can get the 52 days back a year, they just can't believe that. So they have significant limiting beliefs. So now I have to coach them out of their limiting beliefs and into a life and a future that is bigger and better for them. So to me, the guiding statement was, if you could take 7 listings or more a year and I can give you one day back a week, what would you do with an extra 52 days? And that became, Sam, our filter for recruiting. And now, anytime we would build anything by a piece of software, create a process, I would just ask the question, does it enhance this extra day that we give our agents back, or does it compress that time and actually take it away from them? And it was a very clean value proposition. And I knew what I was answering to, what I was held accountable to, what I was delivering. And I never had to go around that. Regardless, if I could give that agent back what I promised, I won. We won and we delivered on our promise. And that became kind of the snowball effect for our growth.
So if I can just kind of recap what you just said, first of all, it's about finding out from the team what really motivates them and then giving it to them, obviously, so that they're more willing to go out there and work hard. And secondly, it's about making them more productive. So obviously that's more capacity for growth.
Right. So you asked, how did that actually happen? So the first one was, we just had a very dialed in value prep. And the best part, Sam, was we didn't waste our time in meetings. So I would talk to somebody. If that conversation went sideways, I'd know in like 10 minutes. It would be done because we recruited hundreds and hundreds of agents. So for every 10 agents we talked to, we made 2 offers. We had to recruit a lot of agents that would fit the right model. But once they came into the fold, into the ecosystem, it was great for us because they were very, what we call model match. The model match was just really aligned and really right on. And that was really positive. So aligning the agent with the value prop became really great because then people always talk about recruiting and retention or some version of that, right? Like we didn't have any retention. There was no retention. Yeah. We always delivered. So we didn't have to do anything different. We just kept our promise. We didn't have to go back to an agent and say, let me take you to lunch. Or we didn't have to do any of that because we were just who we were. And that completely reduced the stress of the organization. I'd say that was number one. Number two and three, very quickly, what you asked was we realized a big part of delivering on the promise was the onboarding. And again, good process drives good results, right? So our onboarding, we just wanted to make sure that was clean and smooth. And this may sound like a novel idea, but it's not. I don't know why more people don't do this. We just said, instead of each office and office manager or ops manager or sales manager onboarding an agent, we are going to have a dedicated onboarding concierge. That's it. Like that's all we did. And yeah. So one person or one team, they manage the entire onboarding of everybody. So Sam, if I were talking to you, you were agreeing to come on board, I would do a warm handoff to the onboarding concierge. And the onboarding concierge, we made sure we hired the right personality for it. And that person just white gloved you into the firm. And yeah. That was the best experience, as opposed to taking other operational people out of their roles to kind of help with bringing a person on. We just let one person do that because then anytime a process changed, I only had to change it with one person or one team. And believe it or not, for the entire organization, Sam, we only needed one person to run onboarding. And it was not complex. It was just running a process and having that person do that all day. So onboarding was very, very key. And I'll give you my last one. culture is built intentionally, right? And culture is really built intentionally. And my answer to most things is these three words, and my team will always laugh at me when I say these three words. I call it the cadence of evangelism. The cadence of evangelism. And people forget what you do. People forget how you do it. And it's totally okay to repeat it all the time because that's just who you are. And you just do it with love and enthusiasm and it works. And so, Sam, we have 22 offices across a 450-mile footprint. I don't know what that's in kilometers, but it's up and down the California coast, right? Mm-hmm. I couldn't get to all these offices. So what we did was we said, we are going to have one kind of mastermind coaching call, if you will, every day of the week. So at 9 a.m. every single day of the week, we had a built-in call. And we started doing these calls and every day was themed. So Monday was there something different, Tuesday was something different. Originally, my partner and I ran all the calls and then we found an expert to run each call for each of the 5 days. So we would have anywhere from 600 people at the highest point in the company. We would have anywhere from 300-400 people live on the call every day. And we'd have 10,000 downloads a month. So we had people, not even TELUS agents, listening to our calls. And when I would poll agents and ask them if there was one thing I would take away that would really hurt what this firm is all about, all they said was it was the calls because it kept us connected to the hive, the community, if you will, because we would be there all day, every day with the cadence of evangelism, coming back with value and value and more value. But Sammy, if you think about it, we put out more content than every coaching company in the world. There's nobody's putting out 5 days worth of content every day. And all those calls are still live now on the podcast. Like there are hundreds of calls on the podcast live. So it was the TELUS podcast. It was rebranded as the Douglas Elliman podcast. It's on the podcast app store. It has all our archives for the last 4 years and every call, every single day, and it's free.
Wow. So the three things: look after the people, give them what they want in terms of making sure that they're well-trained. Onboarding is an interesting one. And I think, you know, a lot of small businesses do struggle with that. And then obviously training. And I mean, that's a fantastic idea to implement, just to have a quick call first thing in the morning. And then I guess if you're feeling lonely at all, you can dial back into any of those calls, right?
Right.
Remember that time when we talked about expired listings and...
Exactly. And, you know, I'll tell you this also, a lot of brokers, team leaders, owners of companies, coaches, et cetera, the conversation that the agent asks, call it the initial gateway question that they ask, is often the same. It's like, how do I have a local geographic farm area that I sell in a certain community? Or how do I do for sale by owners? Or how do I do expires? Or how do I work my database? The fundamental building blocks, them are all very similar. So once I do this expired call, and if somebody asks me, hey, Sharon, can you spend 30 minutes with me and teach me this expired thing? I'm like, I'm happy to do it. Go listen to call 247 first, and then I'll spend 30 minutes with you. Right. And so now at least I'm talking at a more personal, customized level as opposed to going through the building blocks every single time, because that's just not scalable when you're growing.
So let's talk about the sale of the business to powerhouse company Douglas Elliman. I mean, they're one of the top five, I think, real estate companies in the US. And we know them in Australia because Frederick works there and, you know, a bunch of other those million-dollar agents. So how did you know when was the right time to get out? When was the right time to sell?
So great question. I don't think you ever know, but I think for us, what happened was we were getting to a point in our business where we had to change it up. Something new had to happen because we were growing to the point, Sam, where our partners and our management team didn't have the capacity to manage any more growth. We had one of two choices, and I'll tell you those choices. Choice number one was to stay the size we were and continuously optimize and become the powerhouse within our footprint, so not expanding and growing any other way. Or option number two, which we actually laid out on the table, was to create this licensed model of actually saying, hey, we're going to take TELUS national, and we're going to give our systems and our productivity and our kind of cultural tools, we're going to just deploy and install them in different teams around the country. Those were the two options. There was no other way you could supercharge growth. And for me as a kind of entrepreneur, growth is very addicting. the puttering along stuff is interesting, but it doesn't do it for me. I want to wake up and go Mach 5 with my hair on fire. To me, I believe in a exponential, bigger and better future. That's what gets me out of bed every day. And it has to be stressful. If it's not, it's not fun. And, and the interesting part, Sam, it's not, I don't say this to say, hey, look at me, I'm awesome. I say this because it's a curse. It's a curse. And as a result of this mild obsession, if you will, I have had a lot of things in my life break down. During our 10X growth period, I was so focused on our kind of hockey stick exponential growth that I completely sidelined my health. And I got to the point where I couldn't work anymore. I couldn't eat anything. It triggered a very acute case of a digestive system autoimmune disorder, which completely crippled me to the point where it made it very hard on my family, on my children, on my relationship with my spouse. And they all paid the price for the curse. And while the result, looking back, was a decent one, a good one for all, there was a lot of pain that went through the process. And I wouldn't wish that time upon anybody. And so it was totally a curse. And now my lesson is, you know, company number three, after we're done, now company number four, my lesson is I just need to do better because without my health, I don't have anything else. So the growth stuff is interesting. So to answer your question about when did we make the decision to sell, two things happened. We were at a place where we needed a partner who could do something that we couldn't do. And so Douglas Elliman is very interesting. They're almost a TELUS in non-TELUS marketplaces, just 10x bigger. Yeah. And we're in, call it the, you know, all the high-end marketplaces, the Hamptons, New York City, Connecticut, Miami, Boston, Aspen, and they just opened an office in Beverly Hills. And it's hard to get traction in a new marketplace like Beverly Hills. It took us 7 years to get traction in Beverly Hills. And it just so happened that our philosophy of building a luxury market footprint was very similar to theirs. And very few people understand that running a luxury market footprint only firm is very expensive. You're dealing with a different kind of mentality of agent. Not good or bad, it is what it is. And they kind of got that, and that was very good for us. So they philosophically understood what we were trying to do. They also were very focused on growth, you know, a subsidiary of a publicly listed company. So they're there for the long haul. They want to build and grow and establish market share. And most importantly, they wanted to be in all the marketplaces that we were in at the same time right then. So it was a very timing-based thing. So I don't know how it is in Australasia, but in luxury markets in the US, branding is very important as to the brand who you are with. You could easily swap brands out in what we call bread and butter America and be okay with it. But the luxury market agent always, for some reason, loves a boutique brand, loves a sophisticated brand. And we thought it would be easy brand transition from TELUS to Douglas Elliman than anything else, because we wanted to give our agents either a same or better brand experience in our minds. And this was not being snooty in any way. We just wanted a same or better brand experience. And that was the cleanest, best fit for us. So I will tell you right now, it was not, of the many suitors we had, it was not the best economics. We actually took probably one of the worst economics deals of all, to ensure that our team and our agents got the best possible transition. Now, publicly, no one will accept that or believe that we did that and said that, but economically, they were the lowest offer among anyone else we had talked to.
So can I ask you, who sought who out when you thought it's time to sell? Did you think, okay, who are my likely suitors, or did they approach you?
Yeah, great question. I tell you what we did. Every year, since I was an investment banker, I like process. So every year we just ran a process. It was informal. So we would go to market every year. And in my opinion, everybody should do this because it's the right thing to do, because you want to know whether what you're building is creating value in the eyes of a potential acquirer every year. So we would just go informally to, and we won't name names, but the right strategic buyers. We went informally to them and we said, hey, we want to run a process in good faith. They ran the process for us, and every year they refreshed our numbers, and we always knew where we stood, and that was a really healthy thing. So we were always open, because you always want to be open. The second thing is, when Douglas Elliman came to California, they had established new leadership that had come to California to decide how they were going to run their Western region business. And they realized that after working on the California business, that it's a super nuanced market, and the fastest way for them to grow was to acquire a company that was a similar fit. So Elliman actually approached us to have the initial meeting. And it was very informal. And that's how the process started. But they initiated the conversation because they wanted to go and look at who may be a potential target for them to help them grow their West Coast business. From a timing and fit perspective, it was very fortuitous.
Yeah, interesting. What about the transition? Obviously, if you own a business, you're always either thinking about growing or selling. You know, it's one or the other. What advice can you give to other business owners? We call them principals. I think you call them brokers in the US. But what advice would you give to people who are thinking about exiting their businesses?
So principals thinking about an exit in today's world, being one and done and having it sold and done doesn't exist. Because if I were buying, say, your business, Sam, as a principal, you built the business. It's just a service business. A lot of people joined the company because they joined you. They were attracted to your leadership. And so yeah. I would require you to stay on and help the transition in as clean a way as possible. And I would incentivize you for that, right? Like I would pay you to say, hey, I'm going to give you $100 for this business. I'm going to go with easy math, right? I'll give you $50 upfront for the asset that you have built. And I'm going to give you another $50 over 5 years with these milestones because you and I should both be incentivized to hit those milestones. And I think that's a very normal way of doing a deal. Because of public company disclosure requirements, we can't share our deal terms. It was very formulaic and it was good for everybody. But as a principal thinking about selling right now, you want to set up a plan where you can sell the business 3 to 5 years before you actually need to be out of it. That's the first thing. You're not done in 2018 and be done. Like, so conceptually speaking, this is a 7-year process where the first year you're getting your business ready for sale. The second year, actually putting a deal together. And then you have 3 to 5 years on the deal. Now that, Sam, is only true if the market cycle is on your side. You know, so if you have a 7-year window and the market cycle kind of is in the middle of one of those,
yeah,
something is obstructing something else. I'll tell you how we thought about it and you'll actually laugh because everyone thinks this whole 10X growth thing was architected by a mastermind. It wasn't. All we said was, hey, we're at roughly $300 million in gross sales. For this to be exciting for everybody, we need to be at close to 3.3 billion, close 10X of that. Mm-hmm. And I said, great, if our business gets to 3.3 billion and we can manage the economics overall, this gets exciting for everybody involved. Awesome. But however, you don't have unlimited time. So I said, you know, we're coming out of the recession. We probably are in 7-year cycles. So we're going to give ourselves 5 years to grow 10X. And then another 2 years to like weather a storm in the transition. So that's a 7-year cycle. So I was like, oh, we have to do 10X in 5 years. If not, we will never make it. It was very simply, that's all it was. It was like, how do we take this business? How do we make it exciting for everybody? How do we compress the growth with a very specific result in 5 years? And Sam, now the math became really easy, right? You just said, all right, if I need to grow 10X in 5 years, I need to almost double my business every year with some attrition. How do I do that? I need to recruit and I need to increase productivity. So all we did was, how do we recruit? How do we increase productivity? That's all we did every day. And we were really maniacal about tracking that, right? I'll give you a quote, which you will really love.
I love a good quote.
You've generally heard half of it. The half of the quote is, whatever we measure improves, right? But here's the second half. Whatever we measure and report improves exponentially. The second part is the most important part. That's where the reporting accountability comes in, the cadence of accountability comes in. And so even for recruiting agents, it's amazing to me how people don't build a machine around it. Like we had all our sales managers get on a call every day. And Sam, I'll give you the tactical of what actually happened on this call because people think it's not fancy, right? You get on the call, there's 8 sales managers on the call and the host of the call, whoever's playing host, our chief operating officer, he'll say, okay, Sam, give us your numbers. And essentially that your numbers, you have 3 numbers. What you did yesterday, what you're committed to doing today, and what you are going to do tomorrow in numbers. So you would say 110. That means I had 1 appointment yesterday. I committed to having 1 appointment today and I have 0 appointments booked for tomorrow. That's all it was. And then it would be like, okay, Sharon, what do you have? All right, Jim, what do you have? We would just go, right? You'd go around the room. And the interesting part is the next day when you come around and you say a different number, like you're going to get called because you just committed to something and he's tracking it on a spreadsheet, right? Now, the other thing, Sam, is super interesting is you can't say 000 more than like one day in a row, because you're going to start to get embarrassed. That means you had no appointments yesterday, you have no appointments today, and you have no appointments tomorrow. And you're going to say that three times amongst your peers. Like, that doesn't work. So now it just builds in this camaraderie of accountability. Regardless of anything, before you get on the call, you're like, oh my gosh, I better get some appointments, because it's going to be terrible if I get on this call and everyone has 134, 372, and I say 000. It's so simple, Sam, that we just did it, but we did it every single day. People resisted, but we did it every single day for 15 minutes. And I will tell you, something simple like that, our cadence of accountability, changed the way we put numbers on the board.
So obviously it worked for all the people and they ended up getting great results just by being accountable, just that one simple thing. Well, Sharan, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I'm looking forward to meeting you at the Business of Real Estate in September. Thanks very much for being on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, Sam.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.